Welcome to Audio Notes. I'm David Finkel, Artistic Director of Music at Menlo, and it is with great pride and eager anticipation that I extend this first welcome to the 2012 festival season, Music at Menlo's 10th anniversary. This season, we explore the power of music from the listener's perspective. How does music affect us? How do we use it? What does it mean to us? Over the course of 8 concert programs surveying music's various powers, from the animation of dance and drama to the deepest nourishment of the soul, this season meditates on the simple and audacious question, what is music for? We've entitled the season Resonance to reflect the deep fundamental exploration of music that we look forward to taking with you this summer. Just as the sound of music depends on the resonance of physical objects, our experience of it as listeners is defined by the emotional resonance it inspires. Music resonates not only in our ears, but in our hearts and minds, and affects us in ways that are impossible to capture in words. It is this strange and marvelous dimension of music that we celebrate this season at Music at Menlo. As in previous seasons, this year's installment of Audio Notes brings you in-depth discussions of the music you'll be hearing at the festival. I'll be joined by Artistic Co-Director Wu Han, Music at Menlo's Artistic Administrator Patrick Castillo, and a few of this season's festival artists who will take you deep inside the music and prepare you for the rewarding musical experience that our audiences have come to expect over the last 10 years. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you at the concerts. Not all music aspires towards gravitas or profundity. The repertoire is filled with music simply designed to entertain. And while history has often taken music more seriously that strives to comment on the human condition, those works whose raison d'être is simply to delight listeners can be every bit as profound. Indeed, in music's uncanny power to inspire such unqualified joy lies its profundity. This summer's final concert program, Delighted, explores music whose primary purpose is to inspire that sheer sense of joy. The program begins with Paul Schoenfield's Clarinet Trio, a work intended for celebratory Hasidic gatherings. Mendelssohn's exuberant Allegro Brillante and Moszkowski's spirited Suite for two violins and piano demonstrate the joyful emotions that music has the power to convey. The season fittingly concludes with Chausson's rousing, colorful, and evocative concerto for violin, piano, and string quartet.
The music of American composer Paul Schoenfield betrays two key elements of his identity. Born in Detroit in 1947, Schoenfield began studying the piano at age 6. He would later study with the renowned pianists Ozan Marsh and Rudolf Serkin, and ultimately cultivated an active performance career as a soloist and chamber musician. Not surprisingly, then, his compositional output has emphasized solo piano music and chamber music with piano. Schoenfield's piano writing has moreover been terrifically colorful, as well as quite technically demanding. Schoenfield has also developed an interest in Jewish folk music out of a desire to explore his own Jewish heritage, and lived for a time in Israel. His trio for clarinet, violin, and piano, composed in 1990 on a commission from the clarinetist David Schifrin, exemplifies this dimension of Schoenfield's compositional language. Schoenfield designed the trio to serve equally well at celebratory Hasidic gatherings or in conventional concert settings. The work thus combines influences of Eastern European Jewish folk music and Hasidic nigunim, or religious music, with the Western classical language of Schoenfield's training. The first movement is a freilach, a klezmer dance genre common to Hasidic festivities. The expressive clarinet glissandi that you'll hear are, of course, a hallmark of klezmer music. Though informed by the Freilach tradition, the wild excitement of this music exceeds what would typically be used as dance music at a traditional Hasidic celebration. Also, the music's immediately seductive impact comes at no expense to its compositional sophistication. Its manic energy belies its skillful craftsmanship. As in all of the best chamber music, each instrument is given a distinct voice, and the dialogue between them drives the music forward. Schoenfield describes the second movement march as, quote, bizarre and somewhat diabolical, end quote. The third movement is entitled Nigun, a kind of religious music mentioned before. The movement begins with a meditative melody played by the clarinet, joined soon by the violin in a thoughtful dialogue. The addition of the piano only reinforces the Nigun's solemnity. The rollicking energy of the first movement returns in the finale, which Schoenfield identifies as a kosatska, a Russian Cossack dance often used in Jewish weddings. Though excellently suited for a celebration, the finale's rhythmic and melodic variety reveal the trio as a thoughtfully wrought piece of concert music as well. The movement's primary melodic material dissolves into a curious conversation between the three instruments. Thank you. but the rhythmic drive of the beginning returns, bringing the trio to a boisterous conclusion. Felix Mendelssohn was recognized within his own lifetime as Europe's single greatest musician. From his early childhood, he manifested a miraculous gift that, in his maturity, would distinguish him as a natural successor to Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven. Mendelssohn was and remains the most extraordinary child prodigy in music history. Not even Mozart in his youth was the child Mendelssohn's equal. By the time he was 13, Mendelssohn had tried his hand at every standard genre of the classical era, and already produced a massive body of works. Over the next 2 years, Mendelssohn would complete his fourth opera, a piano concerto, a violin concerto, a double concerto for piano and violin, and two concerti for two pianos, among other works. In his 16th year came the Opus 20 Octet for Strings, which is acknowledged as Mendelssohn's first great masterpiece and remains a vital part of the chamber music literature today. Mendelssohn composed the Opus 92 Allegro Brillante for piano duet in 1841. The piece was a gift to Clara Schumann, one of the 19th century's finest pianists and the wife of composer Robert Schumann. Clara Schumann and Mendelssohn performed the piece together at a benefit concert for the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra. The Schumanns were great friends and admirers of Mendelssohn and named their youngest son after him. That their fondness was reciprocated is audible in the effervescence of this short but delectable movement for four-hand piano. In performance, the Allegro Brillante often appears, but just as often does not, with an andante introduction, which takes after Mendelssohn's lyrical Songs Without Words for solo piano. This Allegro Brillante reflects another quintessential dimension of Mendelssohn's language, his lithe, breathless scherzos, marked by delicate textures and quick staccato rhythms. Moritz Moszkowski was a German pianist, conductor, and composer of Polish descent. He lived from 1854 to 1925, and, though not a household name today, was celebrated in his time as one of Europe's great virtuosos and later piano pedagogues. He was also a sufficiently able violinist to occasionally sit first violin with the Academy Orchestra. A nervous disorder suffered while Moszkowski was in his early 30s prematurely ended his days as a touring musician, after which point he focused more intently on composition. He was also active as a conductor and scored some early compositional success with his orchestral works, but his reputation as a composer was built almost entirely on the strength of his solo piano and chamber music. The language of these pieces is marked by brilliant virtuosity and usually a lightness of character that qualifies them as salon music. The irresistible charm of much of this music made it widely popular among the day's flourishing amateur music-making community. And that's amateur in the true sense of the word. The typical amateur musician a century ago was actually quite proficient. The Opus 71 suite for two violins and piano is a case in point. The lack of gravitas in this and Moskovsky's other scores has in all likelihood been a major contributor to the modest amount of attention paid to his music. But in its glorification of the two instruments with which Moskovsky was most intimately familiar, the violin and piano, the Opus 71 suite reveals Moskovsky to be a composer of great imagination. The opening Allegro Energico begins with a hot-blooded descending theme in the violins. One impressive trait of the suite is made evident right away. Despite the absence of a viola or cello, Moskovsky's treatment of the violins and piano is such that the music never feels texturally thin. The piano offers quick staccato chords, which the violins answer with fragments of the opening theme. The second theme is more lyrical, but no less impassioned than the first. The second movement is built on deeply affecting melodies, betraying Moskovsky's penchant for the music of Schumann and Mendelssohn. The nostalgic air of the slow movement likewise bespeaks the deep romantic influence on Moskovsky's language. The final movement proceeds with a rhythmic vitality that suggests the tarantella, an energetic Italian dance popularly thought to counter the poison of a spider bite. Thank you. A contrasting middle section is marked by a mellifluous lyricism. But the elan of the main theme returns, and Moskovsky even steps it up a notch for the finale's coda, which brings the suite to an exuberant close. The composer Ernest Chausson represents one of the essential voices of French Romanticism in the latter half of the 19th century. Chausson studied first with the French operatic composer Jules Massenet, and then, more significantly, with César Franck. And his early compositional output, from roughly 1878 to 1886, bears the hallmarks of his training. The music of this period shows an ear for attractively spun melodies and elegant harmonies, and a reserved melancholy that marks Chausson's language throughout his career. Chausson's early music is also characteristically French in its delicacy and aesthetic refinement, though it's also highlighted by the bold chromaticism and instrumental colors of Richard Wagner, which virtually every young composer during this time sought to emulate. But in the late 1880s, Chausson's music grew bolder still, and the French sensibility of his earlier work gained in dramatic depth. The scholar Jean Galois observes that this period coincided with Chausson's appointment as secretary of the Société Nationale de Musique, which, quote, led to his closer involvement in Parisian intellectual and musical circles, and as a consequence to a more elaborate, more intensely dramatic style, as if the musician, brought face to face with other composers, was experiencing either new self-doubts or greater difficulty in expressing his original ideas, end quote. Galois continues, quote, not surprisingly, this whole period is dominated by large-scale, essentially dramatic works, end quote. Though not a work intended for a dramatic setting, the Opus 21 Concerto for Violin, Piano, and String Quartet, composed between 1889 and 1891, does nevertheless illustrate the dramatic character of Chausson's music during this time. It's also, in its design, a unique work, a hybrid between chamber music and double concerto for violin and piano, with the string quartet serving as a kind of pseudo-orchestra, but with each individual player as distinctly involved as befits a chamber work. The concerto begins with an emphatic three-note motif, introduced by the piano, then repeated with the viola and cello. The string quartet expands on this motif in hushed tones. After further build-up, the solo violin makes a dramatic entrance, spinning the exultant main theme from the three-note motif. The solo violin and cello issue a pleading melody built on plaintive half steps. And the music gradually melts into the deeply felt second theme. Building on the exposition's thematic material, Chausson crafts a development section of magnificent power. The three-note motif returns, but now tempered by a gentle response from the piano. Over a shimmering piano accompaniment, Chausson revisits the poignant second theme, slowed down to create a feeling of time suspended. The music finds its way triumphantly back to the first theme. At the movement's climactic point, the plaintive second theme cries out a final time. But the turbulence subsides, and the movement ends on a note of serene repose.
Thank you.
The second movement is a Sicilienne, an instrumental form that dates back to the Baroque period. The composer and chanson contemporary Vincent Dandy compared the wistfulness of this music to, quote, the charming, fanciful gardens of Gabriel Fauré, end quote. The solo violin presents a new musical idea, a kind of thoughtful reflection on the main Sicilian melody. From this grows a beautiful soaring melody in the violin's upper register. Chanson biographer Ralph Grover praises the concerto's third movement as, quote, a tremendous outpouring of despair and pessimism, one of the really remarkable slow movements in all chamber music, end quote. The movement begins with a humorless chromatic figure in the piano, over which appears a desolate theme, played in unison by the piano and violin. The entrance of the quartet heralds a new section. Rather than offer a contrast in mood, however, this passage only deepens the sense of anguish. The featherweight texture of a passage midway through the movement, built on hushed chords in the piano and whispered arpeggios in the strings, makes for a seeming moment of respite. But even this music turns out to be simply another perspective on the movement's essential despair. The music arrives at a piano and violin duet of exquisite delicacy. The chromatic melody and syncopated rhythms sustain a feeling of unease. The desolate theme from the opening returns, but now in a state of great agitation, bringing the movement to an arresting climax. The finale answers the gravity of the slow movement with renewed vigor. Structurally, the finale combines elements of rondo form, in which a recurring theme alternates with contrasting episodes, and variations form, meaning that the recurrences of the theme are steadily transformed throughout the movement. Using this technique, Chausson takes the movement through a variety of expressive characters. There are moments of buoyant playfulness like this first episode, there are passages of heartfelt lyricism, Chausson crafts variations of the main theme, like this one, which transforms it into a devious-sounding conversation. Chausson also calls on an innovation of his teacher, César Franck, who developed the use of cyclic form. Cyclic form is a technique which actually begins to surface earlier in Beethoven's late works, where material from preceding movements returns later in the work, thereby drawing a narrative arc over the entirety of the piece. Indeed, this device lends a very dramatic effect to one of the finale's episodes, which recalls the anguished slow movement. Thank you. After further traversal of a vast expressive terrain, the finale returns to its original dance-like tune, but turned now into a radiantly lighthearted expression. Before coming to a close, the concerto takes one final glance back at the mournful slow movement, but now through the brilliantly colored lens of the finale. Finally, the concerto comes to a glorious finish. Audio Notes is authored and produced by Patrick Castillo and narrated by David Finkel, Wu Han, Patrick Castillo, and Isaac Thompson. Additional mastering is provided by Dahong Situ. Musical excerpts on this disc appear courtesy of the following artists and organizations. Michel Sons' Concerto for Violin, Piano, and String Quartet, performed by Philippe Graffin, Pascal Devoyon, and the Chilingrian Quartet, appears courtesy of Hyperion Records. Paul Schoenfield's Clarinet Trio, performed by Charles Nydick, Lev Polyakin, and Francis Renzi, appears courtesy of Innova Records. Mendelssohn's Allegro Brillant, performed by Duo Turgeon, appears courtesy of the artists. Moritz Moszkowski's Suite for Two Violins and Piano, performed by Jürgen Svensson, Urban Svensson, and Per Tengstrand, appears courtesy of Chamber Sound. Audio Notes is a copyrighted production of Artist-Led.